All right, so I'm going to do this on the blackboard, obviously. So what I'm trying to do is an incomplete and likely incorrect. So this is my huge disclaimer, okay? Survey can you read this at all?
Yeah. I see just on the border. Yeah.
Survey. Now it's fine, right?
Yeah.
Quantum work definitions. Okay, and I try to organize it in such a way that I do some sort of table. So here I want to state what the overall concept of this approach to work definition is. And then I write a formula of the average work. So how is work defined in this concept? And then it's going to be even more complicated. So over here, I want to talk about the work probability distribution. And yeah, usually this will be some P of W. And I try to fill this table sort of from here to here. Okay, it's not going to be column by column. So, okay, the first one, I mean, the order is just arbitrary. So the first one I want to start with is something that is sort of, I think, a bit underrepresented in this community. It's the quantum weightlifting, okay? So and here, so I mean, this is maybe associated with names like Jonathan Oppenheim, Michael Horodetsky, Arberg, Bristol people, and so on and so forth. And there is no time-dependent Hamiltonian. I'll explain in a second what it is. No time-dependent Hamiltonian. Maybe I need this to be a bit broader. Okay, so this approach works like this. You have a system in an initial state, and this may be already compound. So there's a system, but this state may already include some bath. So some thermal bath or something. This is how it relates to resource theory. And initially, you tensor this with an eigenstate of another system. Okay? And this system is what they call the weight. Now, they claim that the extraction of work or the input of work or whatever, that work is associated with this weight system changing from one energy eigenstate, mostly the ground state, to some other energy eigenstate. So the important thing is that it goes from an eigenstate to an eigenstate. So this is like lifting a weight, okay? So at first the weight sits in the ground state and then you lift it and supposedly it's in a different energy eigenstate then. So the important thing is that this thing goes from an energy eigenstate to an energy eigenstate. And so you will do some unitary on the full space of all of this. And the unitary is supposed to conserve energy because, like, in total, energy is conserved. The full energy distribution is supposed to be conserved. And then you go to some rho final. And this should be tensor with this, where, of course, so there's a Hamiltonian for the weight. And this is an eigenstate. So this is supposed to be 0 if this is the ground state. And this is just the eigenvalue, right? So this is supposed to be. So what this means is work extraction is associated with the transition of some system from an energy eigenstate to an energy eigenstate. And if this later or final eigenstate is higher by an amount of W, then there has been loaded an amount of work W onto the weight. So this must have been extracted from this system somehow. And of course, there are all these theorems. So if the system is something and the bath is like a standard bath in an equilibrium initial state, then the amount of energy that you can extract in this concept is bounded by the free energy difference of the system here. So it's not like completely arbitrary. It has some properties that we expect from a work definition, I would say. Okay.
So Johan, just to understand the definition, this H wave. Yeah, no, it's just the definition. It's like so what is that? Is that a macroscopic Hamiltonian, like a microscopic Hamiltonian,
this one?
Mesoscopic, yeah.
Usually, they say it's like an harmonic oscillator, so it's equally spaced.
Okay.
But it doesn't need to be
like a single particle.
Yeah, something like this. Yes. Okay. So, I guess the important is that the spectrum is not like exponentially growing in density and stuff like this. Okay. All right. So, this is already badly organized, because now I have to go down on my knees, but anyway. So then there is this, what I would say the concept is based on time-dependent Hamiltonians. And I think this includes the ideas evolving around passive states, etc. There's a lot of things along these lines. And I think the central thing is here the idea that one is able to write at least the average work as an integral of the expectation value of the change of the Hamiltonian, basically. T dt. So this definition is kind of natural, I would say. It's along the lines of what we would define work in classical physics. I mean, you're in some certain state, in some point in phase space, or something like this. And then, of course, if the energy changes because you do something to the system, because the Hamiltonian is time dependent, then this is probably going to count as work, right? Because you're acting with it from the outside. It, of course, has this property that if you write the full time derivative, which I'm not going to do, of the energy, then you can separate those two contributions in work and heat, and that's going to be the work. And if you say, okay, for a start, consider closed systems, in the sense that the time, the Hamiltonian is still allowed to be time dependent, but I do not have a bath or something like this, so there's not going to be any heat in this sense because there's no external system that can inject energy. So the second term is going to be zero, and then this may be readily converted to this. So this is now Heisenberg picture, so this is the sort of the average energy of the final state minus the average energy of the initial state. Okay, this is final state because this is Heisenberg picture. Right? I mean, I could put this here. And I think this is also very natural. If the system is like closed, there is no bath, or we include the bath into our system operationally, then okay, I mean, if there's no heat to be exchanged, then the total change in energy should probably be work. And this is just final energy minus initial energy, and that's it. So that looks all nice, I would say. And I want to add another concept here, but before I do this, I elaborate a little bit on the stuff over here. Okay. So, now the question marks start to come in, right? So. What is, I mean, work probability distributions? I guess this should be associated with like buzzwords like Jodzinski and stuff, right? I mean, lately people have been interested in the probability distributions of work, work itself being a random variable, and then we have this non-equilibrium, like severely non-equilibrium theorems like Crookes and Jodzinski, and those deal with probability distributions of work. So, I don't know how within this concept we're going to have a distribution of work. This is, I personally do not know. Maybe you do, but I don't. Okay. Okay, I tell you what it cannot be, okay? So, cannot be. I mean, most natural would say, okay, here the weight goes from an energy to an eigenstate to an energy eigenstate. Just let's say a transition that looks like this. Here we have the work. Okay, so it goes to a mixture of energy eigenstates. Simply let this be the probability distribution of work. Well, I can define anything I like, but then I come to the conclusion that just coupling this thing to a thermal state and let it thermalize would load work on the weight system, because then this goes to a thermal state and clearly I have a distribution of work here which is non-zero. So just by coupling the weight to the thermal bath, I could extract work. And this is probably, it doesn't feel right, okay? So. This is, I mean, if something can be put in here within this concept, it's got to be different than this. Okay. So, what do we have here on this side? So, a lot of studies with time-dependent Hamiltonians and probability distributions of work use what is called the two-point energy measurement. And I mean, if you claim that I'm biased, I'd be probably biased towards that one. I see a lot of problems with that one, but this is the only thing I have papers on, okay? So, but yeah, I pretend to be unbiased, okay? So, so what is this? Well, you have a setup sort of like within this framework. You have a system. It's in some state, whatever. You have a time-dependent Hamiltonian, and then before you do the protocol, so before the Hamiltonian becomes time-dependent, you do an energy measurement in this initial energy eigenbasis. Then you get a distribution, probability distribution of energy eigenstates. So then you do your evolution, your protocol, and you end up with some H of T, so some H final, and you do a measurement on this. So then, of course, there's a bunch of conditional probabilities that if you had started at the energy E initial, that you end up at the energy E final. So this is going to be your work. And because there's a distribution, there will be a final distribution of work. So this is the idea here, is that omega then is just, W is just defined as E final minus E initial. Okay, and I'll come back to this in a second, but I just point some other things out over here. So this is already sort of along the lines of trajectories. It's not yet like a full-blown trajectory, but this idea, these concepts to put detailed distributions into this average sort of concept, I think are centered on trajectories, because this is like in the classical counterpart, it's just an issue of trajectories. You have a bunch of trajectories, work is unambiguously defined along the trajectory, so then you get the work probability distribution. So, there, and you could say that this is already a choice of trajectory somehow. You choose like an initial state, which is an energy eigenstate, final energy eigenstate. But this can, of course, be more evolved. You can say, okay, I have a sequence of measurements of whatever. And this is where I see, I hope this is correct, the approaches along the lines of quantum stochastic thermodynamics, like what Alexia was telling. So you basically say, okay, I have unitaries, as long as I have unitaries, I basically go with this definition, and then the measurement happens, and this, is a discontinuous step in the evolution, in the sense that it's not unitary, and then I simply count the energy changes during the unitaries and sort of the sequence of the measurement outcomes. That is what is going to define my trajectory, right? So I have a sequence of measurement outcomes. This defines the trajectory, and along this trajectory, there is a definition of work. And of course, you can have different things here. So sequences of measurements, Bohmian trajectories, and we had Janet's student telling about this during the conference, I guess. So, but you could imagine more things, okay? So all sorts of things.
Can I make a very small
remark? 30 seconds.
Measurement. One of them, I like it, but the main problem is it only works in closed systems. Second comment, Bohmian, it doesn't yet include measurements. It's unmeasured.
So okay. So this is supposed to be general theme of trajectories. I'm not talking about measurements yet, so would you agree that Bohmian is about trajectories? Okay. I don't see the measurement necessarily as the main ingredient here. I think all these are attempts to arrive at trajectory somehow. And in this sense, I put Bohmian there. Okay. So now, there is a big problem with the two-point energy measurement, and I think, well, if you want to call it a problem with the others also, I don't know, this is probably where the argument will start. But, I mean, naively, you would want to have that the average work is going to result as the average of the average over work over the probability distributions with work, right? So this is, one would say, okay, this feels natural. We want to have this. And well, we will maybe come to properties that we want to have later on. But this is like, this is something that one could ask for, okay? But this is not going to happen. It's only, let's talk about the two-point measurement thing first. It's only going to happen if this initial state that I do the energy measurement on is actually diagonal in the energy eigenbasis. Okay, when I say it's only going to happen, it's not that I'm saying necessarily, whenever the initial state is different than that, there's going to be a huge difference. But you can construct definitely a situation and states where if you do not require that the initial state is diagonal in the energy eigenbasis, you violate this. And I think Marty is gone now, which is sad, because he sort of has a paper that is to some extent centered on this and claims that this cannot be resolved, and well, at least we have Janet here, because I guess Janet says somehow the Bohmian thing resolves it or something like this. In general, my understanding of this issue here is that people who are in quantum stochastic thermodynamics sort of accept the situation. They say, well, we do measurements, that is, we act on the system, and the way, it's not just the unitary, something is happening, and the way what we measure, in which way we measure, and so on and so forth, simply may change the state of affairs, and the work distribution in the end will be different. This just reflects later, okay? I'll be done in a second. And this just reflects the physics that's actually happening, the sort of different physical process is reflected in different work distributions, and this is why we do not strictly have to require this. Okay. So I really quickly add something here, just sort of for the sake of the completeness. I just want to say that the closed system people would probably say, well, this is sort of weird, because whatever the measurement does or whatever the environment is, from some perspective, it should be possible to include this into the full system also. And then the full system just does something, and there's going to be some distribution of work. Okay, so in this last line, I'm not really going to put equations, because I just learned about it in this conference. So this is work from measurement, And really, all I know about this is basically from Andrew's talk. Andrew's gone also, right?
He'll come tomorrow.
Okay, sad he isn't here today because he could probably comment on this. So this is just, I mean,
here.
Oh yeah, you're here. Good. So you can comment on all this. Andrew's, and sorry, of course, Cyril's quantum pulley. Didn't mean to leave you out. So I guess you all remember this idea. So what is work here? And it seems to be that the definition of work is somehow different. So I just write work here is associated with lifting the support. I mean a mechanical support, not a mathematical support, while the weight is quantum hovering, right? So you have this atom in the elevator, you measure, you make sure that at this very time the atom is not actually sitting at the bottom of your elevator, and you just lift the bottom of the elevator by a bit. So clearly the work, or at least I think the work concept of work, the definition of work involved here is not going to be the one up there. Because, well, I mean, you could say there's a time-dependent Hamiltonian, you lift the elevator, but you do it precisely in such a way that the bottom of the elevator doesn't feel the particle because it's quantum hovering at this very moment. So, and this is what the story is about. You get work out of it. So somehow this is zero, but after you've done this step, you say, okay, I extracted work because I lifted the elevator. And I have absolutely no idea whatsoever how you could get distributions here. And I want to close with just putting two questions on the blackboard. What properties should the definition of quantum work have? I mean, like maybe some of these things you want to have are not important, or others that I left out are very important, or I don't know, maybe there is no problem whatsoever, it's just all in my head. And some properties are just satisfied. So then what are these properties? And something, and here I'm not unbiased whatsoever. Do we want a concept or a definition that is applicable all the way from quantum to macro? So this is like, often, I mean, you discuss and discuss and discuss, and people got getting tired of this. And then somebody says, well, the case you just described is not important because it's classical. Okay, fine. Maybe we accept that there is a Heisenberg cut, meaning that the quantum world is actually different from the classical world. But if we do not accept this, the concept of work should be continuously applicable from quantum stuff with atoms and so on and so forth to stuff we had yesterday with cranes on building sites lifting tons of weight. And that's it. I didn't make it in 20 minutes, but that's all I wanted to present. And now I hope for you to tell me what the situation is. Okay.
I would like to make clarifications in this box over there.
This one?
Energy measurement box, yes. So you've grouped in this box a very large amount of work.
You mean a large amount of concepts?
There's a lot of different papers and things that all would fit into this box.
You want a finer grain in here?
No, but the way you said it, I had the feeling that maybe this is misrepresenting it, so I would like to repeat it in the way I think it's right.
Fine. And use the blackboard if you want, of course.
But please do not erase too much because I would like to.
The Janet is yellow now.
Yeah. That's a zero.
Or you want to be red?
Red.
You want to be red.
Janet
is red.
So in my view, this problem that Jochen highlighted, that this average is not equal to. So first of all, I agree with your wish, at least what you said, that the average work. The average work is defined by that, right? This should be the definition of average work, right? And in the class case, obviously, it should be equal to the energy difference at the average. So I agree that we want to have equality in size. And the problem, in my view, is that the two-point measurement does not give that equality, okay?
Didn't I say this?
No, you said. So the two-point measurement does not fulfill this equality, and from my point of view, this is exactly the reason why I agree that it's a nice concept, I don't think this is the final answer, and this is why there's been a lot of work trying to extend it. So the trajectories that Alexa, for example, talked about, and that Cyril also uses, and many other people, they are about this sequence of measurements, and the first thing that they achieve in going beyond the two-point measurement is that they can deal with heat. Two-point measurement cannot deal with heat because the definition of work is the difference of energy, so you can't actually deal with heat. And these...
Well, everything that's not work is heat.
So if the isolated system is composed of a system and a bath, then you can deal with heat. I mean, you measure the system and you measure the bath, and you said that the difference in the energy of the bath is the heat. The difference of the energy on the system is the difference of the energy on the system.
Sure, but if you did the normal standard, super standard two-point measurement approach, you measure the system's energy at the beginning, and at the end you take the difference, you say that's the work. That works as long as you have no heat exchange.
Right.
Otherwise, it's the internal energy.
Yeah,
okay.
It's for the close case. Okay, I mean, there's many other facets.
I do not clearly see how this, what you are saying, is different from what I was saying. This is why I put this
That's
sort
right,
of
yes.
this doesn't work but, arrow here.
But the point is that the trajectories that, for example, Alexia and Cyril use, they have equality here. They have equality.
No.
They have equality. So the two-point measurement has inequality, not equal, and these trajectories and other trajectories have equality.
But you make some additional assumptions.
Of course, you always make.
Yeah, I'm not saying this is bad, but it's not like this sort of. If you insist on a view, say I want to have a view where I can possibly. This may not be the adequate, most easy view point of view, but I want to have a view where I include everything. So it's a closed system. So all my measurement apparatus, everything goes in there.
View.
I object even to the, I mean, there's a fundamental problem in trying to have that view, I think. It's that you cannot talk of work without talking of the second law. The first law is not independent from the second law. And so if you want to identify work, you need to have a way to discuss about heat. And this closed system perspective, I mean, Jasinski's, he has a PRL, the first PRL, which is for isolated system. The year after, in the classical realm, he already showed how to make it compatible with the stochastic approach, which is in an open system. But I think
there's already a bit of that in the first paper, right? The second part of the first paper is actually
in the PRL. I don't think
it is. Yeah, the second part.
Okay. But this is very often omitted, and I think it's crucial. We cannot discuss the issue of what is work without discussing the second law. I mean, the way I teach thermodynamics, maybe I'm wrong, but it's, you know, what we call work is the part of the energy that doesn't show up in the second law.
Exactly.
And so insisting to have a work definition in an isolated system, to me, is like a bit of a...
It's a good start, okay? But
so,
this is only the start. What you really want is the open system.
So
thermodynamically irrelevant,
yeah.
So does that go along the lines that we somehow put here what the definition, a property that the definition must not have or is not required to have is to be applicable to closed systems?
No, the other way around. What we want is the definition of work has to apply to open systems and in particular also to closed systems. That's a particular case.
And if you want to interpret Jasinski fluctuation theorem, what he calls dissipative work, if you want to relate this to a notion of entropy production, you need, not mathematically, but you need to conceptually involve, at the end of the process, a weakly coupled bath, which will bring back your non-equilibrium state to the equilibrium state and producing heat. And then what he calls work minus delta F equilibrium becomes something dissipative.
Why can I not talk about work without talking about entropy? I mean, work, I have a very clear, I don't know,
but then you talk about energy.
Yeah. This is required work, right? This is heat.
Yeah, but you have a bath there.
But you are also a little bit heated when you put it.
Okay, I mean, I sort of have a problem with this point of view. I would love a definition of work that, for a start, it does not need to tell something about entropy or even define
but
how the
But how do you distinguish it from energy? How is that concept different from energy, then?
Well, I think to some extent I'm with these people here. Just, I mean, there's something in the lab, something is happening, and there is a weight somewhere. And I just, whatever, initiate the experiment, I leave the lab, I close the door, I come back after some time, I open the door, I look at the weight, and when the weight is lifted, there must have been work involved.
Oh, energy transfers. Energy flows.
There's clearly something different in lifting a work than just whatever, say the word, say the weight is just like we have on these old scales, like this piece of iron, okay? So there's a difference in this piece of iron having been lifted up or just having become hotter. In both cases, there's an energy transfer to the work system, but I mean, my gut tells me that there's a difference.
Yeah, but then you're thinking already macroscopic, right? And
yeah.
Yes.
So we're
but
coming
then,
here, right?
Okay, then I think it's easy, and this is also a standard argument. I would say, you know, when you start talking about thermalization, you start talking about certain coarse graining. And if you talk about certain coarse graining, you're basically conceptually doing something that is very similar to introducing a thermal bath. And then it's simply that this energy is flowing into degrees of freedom that for your class of relevant observable is irrelevant, And this is why you're going to associate this to some dissipative processes.
Okay, so now I'm going to say this in a very nasty way. I don't mean it that way, but this is just a bunch of stories, okay? Saying that the classical mechanics is a limiting case of quantum mechanics. This may be debated also, but for a start, I can show all these things that whatever, if I take h bar to zero, which really doesn't happen, then like the quantum evolution really gradually changes into the classical evolution. I have this Ehrenfest theorem that tells me that the expectation values of position and momentum evolve in the same way they would in the classical case, unless the wave function is spread out over regions on which the potential has a sharp curvature, and all these sorts of things. There are all these sort of arguments that elucidate how actually it is true that classical mechanics is just a limiting case of quantum mechanics. So if you claim, well, it's not so clear to be seen, but all those like macroscopic things are, you can always organize it such that it works out, I would love to see the analogous arguments that explain to me in a, well, for me personally, of course, in a way that I can understand, how it is really necessarily the case that in the limit of macroscopic system, everything works out as it is. If you say, oh, heat is just gonna go to some macro variable, it's just gonna happen like this because of the second law, la la la.
It's not la la la. You do a computer experiment, people do this all the time with many degrees of freedom. The physical observables they are interested in are very macroscopic in the sense that they depend on many details. And you run the simulation and you observe something that is extremely well predicted by stochastic theories, which are irreversible.
Yeah.
And you know that your simulation is actually reversible.
I think I'm one of the persons who has really made a huge effort to show precisely this, and what you say is right. But why? From a fundamental perspective, why? We've seen diffusion in Heisenberg chains, just solving the Schrödinger equation. We've seen Dzerzhinsky being fulfilled on this basis for completely closed systems where there are no thermal initial states, but other states, and so on and so forth. And I'm not saying that this is not right. I'm just saying there is something missing. If you would say, then, I mean, and I think this relates actually to the previous talk I was giving here, where I said, I see that the second law, I'm not doubting the second law. It's definitely going to be there. I bet money on it, right? But huge amounts of money, taking all odds, okay? But it's still not fundamentally clear, at least to me, why this is the case. And you have, I mean, probably Marcos can tell a story about this also. It's like there are all these integrable, and I mean, they are not the majority, but it really depends on the system. Sometimes systems sort of evolve that you can describe the evolution using a stochastic description, and this is the majority, I agree, but I do not yet fully understand why.
Yeah, but this is what, you know, the preoccupation of Maxwell and Boltzmann.
Shall we extend the discussion to other people?
Yeah, but I want to comment on the fact that mathematical physics, there are some models where you can prove it with some epsilon going to zero, and then there are some.
That's
more
basically the hard sphere gas, right, with the radii, and other than that, there's a problem with ergodicity.
Well, no, I think in infinite, even integrable infinite systems, right?
That's a problem. It's a problem. Even the simple derivation of Boltzmann equation, for example, from first principle, it's
very hard.
There are very limited results, which are not.
This, I mean, now I sort of really want to hand this on, but can we summarize this last thing that sort of a lot of these questions maybe answered or transferred to another regime by saying, okay, we want, as you say, we want to have the second law. Unless we do not claim that there's going to be a second law, we should better not talk about work. Is that summarizing what your point
is?
Repeat
the last part.
So before we start talking about work, we should first agree on that there is going to be a second law and accept it.
Yes.
Okay, fine. I'm just trying to clarify. It's a point.
Can Sarah say something?
Can somebody else now chair this discussion? Because I'm standing here for a while. But you want me to go on?
Yeah.
Okay, so, but now...
Sorry, can Sarah say something now?
Now I'm going to only be chairing. I'm not going to answer questions from my personal point of view. Yes.
So just maybe this is summarizing what you have said before, but maybe the distinction between the chain of energy and the chain of energy that you want to call work or heat will be, I mean, to make this kind of distinction, you have to make an assumption of how the energy is exchanged. So for example, in the first case, if you just say, this is what I call my weight, and I look at this chain of
this
energy.
One?
Yeah. If you don't make any assumption, as you say, it would be something you would like to call work when the weight is heated, or something you would like to call heat when this piece of metal that is going with some entropy and something. So then you have to choose how you make this distinction. So the second law is one way of making this distinction. You can also, if you use the second definition, here the distinction is made by saying work is more about unitaries and non-unitaries will lead you to heat, but in both cases it's choosing some distinction between them.
But that means you accept non-unitaries in the first place.
Means you accept non-unitaries in the
first place. I'm just trying to understand.
Yeah, sure. And just a second comment. It's about the self definition because so
this one?
Yeah, this one, just to clarify a little bit. So actually, here the definition that's taken in this article, but actually it has been used in other ones before, is to say that work will be the chain of potential energy. So here it's a chain of potential energy of your particle when it's raised into the gravity potential. But it's also the definition that is used in thermoelectric devices when you say that your electrons that are going, that are rising in the electric potential are able to provide some work afterwards. Sometimes this work is more about the energy that you can extract afterwards, or this, the fact that you are high up in the potential energy. And I think it's really related to the second one also. The thing is that If you want, when your particle is moving, your
could you maybe just come here and explain? Because I already get confused. Is it related to this? Or this?
So
now you are green.
The picture that is here, can I put it here? So you have some potential, V of X, some potential energy, and some position. And this potential energy is changing in some way. And when your particle is here or here, okay, if you are able to bring your particle from here to here, and you know where it is afterwards, then you have a change of potential energy. And this is some energy that you can use to do something. So you can, if you want, you can extract work, or you have to pay work to this change if you want to do it in a controlled way. And so this corresponds, for example, to so if this V is electric potential, this corresponds what you have in your thermoelectric device. So you manage using some thermal mass to bring your electron up in you have to need of course hot baths, cold baths, and so on. And your engine has a purpose to increase the electric potential of your electrons, and then afterwards you can do something with this potential energy that is increased. And in your case, it's similar, but it's a gravity potential, so you rise, because you rise your particle
Thank you. So I think I understand this, but it's correct that it's not this, right?
So
or
you can make a link. When you say so, here I'm changing the position and my potential is fixed, and actually it's similar to say I keep my particle in the same position and I change each time my V of T.
But as long as it is actually there, this is going to apply while it's quantum hovering.
So here we are thinking about the process in which we extract, we extracted this work in this
right, case. Right, right.
But what I mean is that a change of potential energy, you have a change of potential energy because you have to change your position from the control way. You can also see it as a
so the idea is
time dependent of the potential where the position
change of potential energy is work, basically.
Yeah, this is I would say more than the definition that is here is change of potential energy.
Okay, thank you. So now I forgot the order, so we're just going to
maybe I'll just add an experimentalist point of view to this. So as an experimentalist, I like definition number two, having to do with time-dependent Hamiltonian. We have the capability of making sequences of measurements on our quantum bit, seeing how the density matrix evolves, and each step in time, we can evaluate the work due to the changing Hamiltonian, say the time-dependent Hamiltonian. But the part that's challenging and interesting is that when you're making measurements, we have also changes in the energy of the system that are not due to the time-dependent Hamiltonian. There's some sort of heat. If you're going to divide energy between work and heat, then it has to be heat. And so we have heat, and so you think, okay, well, we can close the system, it satisfies, maybe we can use this two-point energy measurement, it all agrees very well. The tricky thing is that the heat affects the quantum state, which then affects the work. So the heat and the work become intertwined in a way that makes it harder to write down the fluctuation theorem that the work satisfies, because things get mixed up because of the quantum dynamics. But I think maybe this is a good segue to what Philippe might say, is the question of, you might want to define heat as your system, if your bath, you look at the energy changes in your bath. If it goes up, that's heat flow in one direction. If it goes down, that's heat flow in another direction. But we can have with measurements cases where there's no energy exchange with the bath, yet there's changes in the state. So, or the energy exchange kind of goes in one direction, not the other direction. So you can have cases where detectors don't really make sensible baths. And, you know, do we have to sort of reevaluate how what we call heat in order to make sense of this discussion and agree on a definition of heat? I think that's central to the second definition, is how we think about heat.
Well, there's two things, right? There's this type of heat.
Wait a second.
Very particular to measure.
John, please. We're doing this from the left to the right now. Sorry. Okay. So I think. Mark, I think you've been the.
I guess I raised my hand about 5 minutes ago. So what was I going to say? This is sort of an outsider's perspective on all this. It feels to me like any definition has to be system specific and maybe protocol specific.
Okay.
That, you know, in the real world, when I want to do work, you know, I want to lift a weight or I want to run my car, I have some identifiable thing that I want to do. And so we need something within each system. We have to pick the thing that we want to do that we're going to call energy that we can use. While still thinking of some box in which everything is sitting in the box, so that at some point we have to decide what the whole system and environment and everything is and put all of it together. Bringing a definition of heat, we want to define heat by the second law. First, we need a definition of entropy, and we can't just use von Neumann entropy because that's just going to be constant and irrelevant. So. We have to have some coarse graining to define the entropy. And now, once I've started coarse graining, I can now decide which variables are going to be the work variables and which variables are not going to be the work variables that I don't care about. But I think, I can't just hand you a system. I can't write down a Hamiltonian for everything and answer these questions without further specifying what I'm going to think of as the work variables and what I'm going to think of as the key. It seems to me as an outsider.
Okay. Thanks. Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, I think, yeah, I was talking to Robert about, there is an assumption here of adiabaticity that one has to be careful about, right? Because if I take a quantum Hamiltonian, right, and then I do something like sufficiently fast, I mean, or actually, it would be really very difficult to be sufficiently slow for this to happen in a macroscopic system. So I bring the system back to the initial Hamiltonian, and
you mean,
then
it is adiabatically, not. It would be really, need to be really, really slow if you want to do it adiabatically.
That's right. Okay. Really slow, actually impossible for a macroscopic system. So and then that definition is not really the work, right? Because you've done something, you come back to the same Hamiltonian, and the work you've done is not zero. Right? Because you change the.
In the adiabatical case or in the
line there is not zero.
That's right. So normally what I'm saying is actually that is almost never gonna happen in a macroscopic system.
Does everybody understand? Like, can you also say which of these
this one here? You see closed system.
The one in the bottom, right?
You see in a closed system, this is not going to happen for a macroscopic system.
That's right.
You take a protocol, you start and end at the same Hamiltonian, and
you've heated the system. I mean, so the system is horrid and you've done work.
It's not going to happen in practice, or it cannot happen even mathematically? Because if I go like infinitely slow, like the age of the universe.
That's right, but no, I can tell you that there will be systems for which you cannot go that slow.
Okay, I understand.
There will be systems with level spaces so small that the age of the universe will go that.
Wait a second. We're doing this from left to right, okay? So John is waiting, okay? So anybody here? You wanted to say something, I guess?
Yeah, but I just wanted to say that for me, the classical limit is different than the microscopic limit. I don't know why now, but I had in mind.
This is about this?
Yes.
Okay.
About what you said, in the lab, the stone gets hotter, but this is not it's not only classical, you can have. So I was thinking in these works of Gaspar, where he has just a few degrees of freedom, everything controlled, and he linked irreversibility to the singularity on the probability distribution of momentum in phase space. So everything there is non-dissipative, but it's fully Hamiltonian. I don't know why it was. Yeah, this was that the microscopic for me is different than the classical.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, so two separate comments related to things that were said, which are all very interesting. The first one is towards what Kager was saying, which I agree with, and having seen like many of the talks of the conference regarding measurement protocols, I think this is not settled, I would say. But, you know, there's also this issue of, you know, how do I define heat? If I have a time-dependent Hamiltonian, I'm not measuring the system and it's connected to a bath, and then I would just say it's the energy that goes to the bath. Now the question is whether the energy change due to measurements is really heat, or can you see that at the level of a measuring apparatus and the system has work? I mean, it could still, you see what I mean? I could do a purification, I can describe the measurement as a kind of unitary.
I see what you mean, yes.
And then I don't know whether it's you. I'd say open question. Regarding what Marcus said about this thing, I mean, there I think, well, his notion of entropy in second law, we must remember also Kelvin's statement of second law doesn't involve entropy. It involves a restricted protocol. So you have a time-dependent Hamiltonian, which is cyclical, go around, and all he says is that, you know, work must be greater than the free energy change. This doesn't really involve an entropic statement per se.
You can't define the free energy until you define
right. But wait. So this is the second point I'm going to make. You might say, okay, fine. But then there is this very, very nice set of works by Hilaire Védian prior to his work on ergotropy, which demonstrates both classically and quantum mechanically that all you need to prove the Kelvin statement of second law is quantum mechanics. There's no other
you need a definition of entropy. I don't know this word, but you can't talk about entropy until you define entropy.
If I take, if point of view, the key is the initial state, right? So if I take rho zero as being a passive state, single entropy, then the work must only be positive. You can prove that.
That's right.
What's the definition of work?
So the definition of work is this one, is the second part, the average work down below here, this one. So if rho zero is passive with respect to the Hamiltonian, the initial Hamiltonian,
then remind me what passive
means. Passive means that the state commutes with the Hamiltonian and it has eigenvalues which basically decrease as the energy levels of the Hamiltonians increase.
Okay.
And so then you can prove mathematically, W must be positive, classically and quantum mechanically. The only problem is if you define rho zero in microcanonical ensemble, then you have a problem because you can always extract work from that, right? So you have to define the ensemble with the volume, not the surface, okay? And then you have, back again, W must be positive. The problem is then, if you say, I take n copies of rho zero, then you can prove again that rho must be completely passive. It has to be of Gibbs form. And this is, for me, is a very illuminating thing. I mean, it clarifies at least the unitary case in the case when you're cyclical in the Hamiltonian, everything is somehow nice.
Can I say something to that?
Yeah.
It's already 10:30 something. Okay, now for the closing comments of this session.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to comment on the on the passive discussion. I mean, certainly it's a valuable concept, and there's no problem with it. But I also think, on the other hand, it's a bit of a red herring for the reasons that we already mentioned. The reasons are, it deals with unitaries. It's about what happens to a state when you do a unitary on it. And as Mastroianni already said, and I agree, we should be thinking about general open processes where we can have heat and work in unitaries we never had. So the whole point is, the passive discussion is interesting, but it is not the crucial thing.
I can always go to a extended system where my
global you can always, but you can also just leave the whole thing and start with an open system and describe that.
But I think if you just have access to the system, then I don't think there is a unique way of doing thermodynamics at the level of that system. This is my opinion.
You mean there's no unique answer to all the questions we have?
No, I don't think there is.
I agree. I think that's a good time for coffee.